Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cabecina ahora, fracaso, Delgado, está habilitado. Palermo, Ferrari, al cielo, habilitado. Gol de Palermo, gol de Palermo, gol de Palermo.
Good morning. Across the United Kingdom, people have been celebrating the start of the new millennium.
Que mete ahora para Palermo, habilitado. Acaba Martín para el segundo, Palermo para el segundo. Si llega hasta Palermo para el segundo.
Hundreds of thousands converged on city centres the length of the land to enjoy fireworks, street parties and concerts.
Estamos en casi 7 minutos. Dos Bocas, Miro, Real Madrid. Hace partido el pase para Roberto Carlos, abarcando Ibarra, engancha Roberto Carlos, tiene descuento Roberto Carlos.
The first babies of the century have been born and there's no real sign yet of the millennium bug.
Hello everyone, welcome to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller, opposite me is Jonathan Wilson, and joining us today is Rupert Fryer, football writer, editor of Brazil Global Football and contributor for The Guardian, Independent, ESPN and many, many more. Rupert, it's a bloody pleasure having you here.
It's a pleasure to be here, Marcus.
Good man. And I should say, a former player for the Football Ramble football team.
Indeed.
Yes.
So am I.
Yeah, I tell you, you did have a 20-minute sub appearance once.
No, 20 minutes from the start, then I got subbed. But
oh, yeah.
Anyway, who's counting?
Due to injury, not being...
No, it was due to being tired.
And I think only one of us had the number 10 retired as well, so...
Well, indeed, yeah. We'll get on to that, I'm sure, who you modelled your game on. But we should say that... that today we're talking about the Intercontinental Cup, sorry, or officially called the Toyota European South American Cup, which happened in the year 2000, which finished Real Madrid 1, Boca Juniors 2. Rupert, why have you chosen this game?
I chose this game, I think, because it was just sort of like the perfect synthesis of, I think, three major players from the last couple of decades or so in Argentinian football who kind of resonated beyond their borders in Carlos Bianchi, the manager in Riquelme, of course, the Argentina's last great enganche, and Martin Palermo.
Call him by his full name.
Who?
Saint Martin Palermo.
San Martin, of course.
I suspect that you've really chosen this because you're an enormous fan of Juan Roman Riquelme.
I am indeed.
And you hinted at it there. You feel that he is the last great... Would you say number 10?
I'm not sure. I think our definitions of 10 have kind of changed a little bit over the last couple of decades.
Yeah, games change. I mean, Messi is a 10, but he's a very different 10 to Riquelme. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's the last of that old school... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you use the word enganche. Enganches don't exist anymore because everybody is an enganche. Everybody's linking everything now.
So what is the translation of enganche?
It means hook. And the enganche was the player he was the hook who linked the midfield to the forward line. So Argentinian football had this great... tradition of la pausa, the pause, and it's that moment of stillness as a number 10 plays the pass to the forward that is celebrated. I mean, I suppose in world terms, the great example of La Pausa is Pelé rolling the ball outside him for Carlos Alberto in the 1970 World Cup final, which really annoys Argentinians that a Brazilian is the one who achieved this on a sort of global stage. But Argentinians, I think, would probably say that certainly in relatively recent times, the greatest exponent of this is Carlos Pochini, who, yeah, the great Independiente enganche.
Who has a pass named after him.
Yeah.
The Pochinesco.
I interviewed him about this, and he's a very strange, awkward man, but get him talking on La Pausa, he will go on forever. he's like literally blood out of a stone, and then suddenly this tidal wave. And yeah, he actually explains there's two different types. There's the one where the player is still and this play sort of stops, and then he triggers the pass. And there's the one where you create a moment of stillness by moving at the same pace as everybody else. And he had this incredible recall, described a goal he'd set up in the 1984 Libertadores final against Gremio. And when I went on YouTube to look it up afterwards, his description of it is exactly what happens. So I think La Pausa is sort of, it's that the enganche has this sort of vision of everybody on the pitch. They know where everybody is and they see the space and they play the pass. And La Pausa is that final moment before it's played. And Riquelme was the modern master of that.
Yeah, we were just talking about our mutual friend Ezequiel Fernandez Mores before we came on air.
And actually, a great Argentinian journalist.
A great Argentinian journalist. And actually, when speaking to him, he said to me about football that there is no music, but La Pausa helps make the music.
I love that. We should say about this game that, of course, the Intercontinental Cup doesn't exist anymore. It was sort of the pre-runner to the Club World Cup, would you say?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah. It was around for a few years. I think the last of its kind was 2003 or 2004. But it was seen as the unofficial sort of Club World Cup title. It was the winners of the Champions League versus the winners of the Copa Libertadores. And at that time, it was kind of all the winners of the European, the top prize in Europe, top prize South America. That kind of distinctly tells us that this side is the best team in the world. And that's obviously been extrapolated out with the Club World Cup and teams from other continents are involved.
Indeed, yeah, but we invariably still get that game. Very, very often we still get
of course
that game. I find it really curious, in fact, just as a quick caveat, that no Mexican side has ever got to the final, I don't think, which just seems strange to me.
What, of the Club World Cup?
Of the Club World Cup, because they're notoriously pretty strong.
Yeah, although, I mean, the Libertadores kind of fixed against them.
Yes.
So they'd have to do it through the CONCACAF version.
Yes.
Which means they start early in the Club World Cup. Whether that makes a difference, I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean,
so just to clarify what I mean when I say Libertadores is fixed against them. So Mexico obviously is part of CONCACAF, but they because of their massive TV market, they play in the Libertadores and have done since the early 90s, I think.
Not anymore, but they stopped now. But yes.
Yeah, but
for
they
a time,
did for
they
a long
did.
Time.
They did, yeah.
And there was various things to try and stop them winning it. So if they got to the final, they would always play the second leg away because the logic was the Libertadores trophy can never be awarded outside of South America, unless it's in Madrid last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Less said about that, the better, perhaps. but yeah, so as you say, Rupert, inevitably or invariably, is the South American champions versus the European champions in the Club World Cup.
Well, I think it's worth saying as well that it was the gulf between South American football and European football, although significant in 2000, was not as significant as it is now.
Sure, and the point I was going to make is that there was always this chat that it means more to the South American side than the European side. Yeah. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course it does. It's their chance to flex their muscles on a global stage and to show that their football can compete. I mean, after this game, Carlos Bianchi said that we showed that Argentinian football is the best in the world, which, you know, I think he got a bit ahead of himself then. But
yeah,
which
and Florentino Perez famously said, how are we going to conquer the Asian market with performances like that?
Exactly.
But I mean, what do you call that Carlos Bianchi's, maybe he's Larry Davy, Larry David
maybe
moment.
Perhaps it's Larry Davy moment, indeed.
if you're a fan of lookalikes. But yeah, so, I mean, as you say, Jonathan, at the time, the year 2000, wasn't the gulf, perhaps, between the two sides. The previous final, I think Manchester United had won 1-0, of course. But going into this one, Boca Juniors, certainly with those players in among their ranks, there was a bit of excitement from the Argentinian sort of perspective here.
Well, there's always huge excitement ahead of these games. I think not least because traditionally we always have a good 6-month gap between the Libertadores final and the Club World Cup. And so everything just becomes focused on that. Well, whatever's going on in those 6 months, they disregard.
I mean, that's, again, the calendar has changed. The Libertadores final is now later in the year.
It's now late in the year.
So this game was played, I think, the end of November. So, yes, roughly 6 months after both the finals.
Yeah, I think that's a shame. I really enjoy, I think, as an observer, I think I really enjoyed those 6 months because now, with globalisation of the game the way that it is, teams are invariably ripped apart. But this Club World Cup was great at just keeping teams apart. I mean, the Corinthians team who beat Chelsea in 2012, then they lost one player over that 6 months because everybody stayed because they wanted to be a part of this. And indeed, they signed Paulo Guerrero, so they got stronger before this competition.
So Real Madrid, they'd won the Champions League final that year in 2000, beating Valencia 3-0 in the final, which included a lovely volley from Steve McManaman.
It did.
And Boca had beaten Palmeiras in the two-legged affair, of course, in the final of the Copa Libertadores on penalties. They'd beaten their fierce rivals River on the way there. So they were in pretty good shape. So, I mean, how good was this Boca team, Rupert, in terms of other Boca teams? You know, because as you say, Riquelme and Palermo are the two kind of standout greats in that side who have statues to them at Boca Stadium.
Yeah, they were. They were undoubtedly the two stars. I think the rest of the...
I know I've told you this story.
Sure.
Indulge me for a moment.
Please, Jonathan.
I went out with an Argentinian girl for 3 years.
Okay.
And
none of us ever met, coincidentally.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, if you've ever been to Argentina, he's already showing off there.
Yeah. <Big time. laughs>
But carry on, my good man.
And I think like the first big family dinner, I think I'd met her dad before this, but yeah, family dinners are big things. So I'm very, very nervous. And I want her dad to like me.
Yeah, turn up in your Sunderland kit, did you?
And his brother, Sebastian, Uncle Sebastian, who didn't really know much about football, but he and...
Probably not compared to you, Jonathan.
Araceli's father. Well, Araceli's family were all Boca season ticket holders.
Okay, right.
And her dad definitely knew a lot about football.
Oh, Sunderland playing red and white, that's no good.
It's not, but we had Julio Arcas, so...
Okay, fair enough, Okay.
And Sebastian and her dad would often argue. So Uncle Sebastian, trying to make conversation, says to me, "Yeah, who do you think's better, Palermo or Riquelme?" This is, what, nine years after this game? Mm-hmm. But they both, via various circuitous routes, gone back. Their relationship, which I'm sure we'll talk about, had soured by then. They didn't get on at all. And I, in my bad Spanish, thinking this is a really kind of awkward moment because if I pick the wrong one... Mm-hmm. I could really annoy Araceli's dad.
Which one's the right answer?
Para mí, el jugador más importante de Boca es Bataglia. Who's the hard-working holding midfielder?
Right.
And Araceli's dad, it turns out, was a massive Bataglia fan.
Oh.
And I could not have said anything better. So let's not forget, they also had Sebastian Bataglia, who has won more trophies with Boca than any other player.
Absolutely. I think some of them might be debatable. I don't think he managed a minute in at least a couple of those.
he suffered a lot with injuries.
But he suffered a lot with injuries, yeah.
Well, I'm suitably impressed that you impressed Uncle Sebastian. So, yeah.
Indeed. But going back to...
But it was a good side. I mean, had Oscar Cordoba was a good goalkeeper.
Yes,
the Colombian
goalkeeper.
Jorge Bermudez was a really good centre-back. Basualdo was a very...
He's like 37 and still going.
Yeah.
I mean, you can obviously, these are good names. Badiso was on the bench.
Badiso, he came on for the last couple of minutes, I think.
Went and had a good career at Roma for a while.
And I think just... Quickly going back to the River Plate quarterfinals that season, it was also the game of the Gol de la Muletas.
Which is one of the great moments of Palermo's legend.
With a goal on crutches, where essentially he had ripped his knee apart 6 months previously, had rushed back desperately to get into this game. The game was, I think, second leg, the game was poised. I think Boca were one goal up, but one goal for River and everything would be equal again. Palermo hobbles on, can barely even move.
I mean, it's ridiculous. He can't play. It's ludicrous he's being chucked into action.
It's ridiculous. But he came on when the game was very stretched because River are chasing it. And so anyway, the ball gets cut back to him. There's this huge buck of surge forward. The ball gets cut back and he spends about 5 minutes just controlling the ball, spinning around, having a little look around. He's about 12 yards out and then just manages to swing his leg enough to roll it into the corner. But after that,
this goal, when he set Boca's goal scoring record, they released a special edition series of boots, each of them numbered, referring to his 170 odd, 180 goals.
19 maybe, but yes.
No, it was. I'm sure it was 170 because they had that counter that kept on going on.
He scored a lot of goals.
And this was number 70. 70-something, 73, 76, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they auctioned off these boots for charity. And that pair of boots was the one that fetched the highest price.
Is that right?
All Palermo's goals, this was the one that people wanted to... Yeah, to buy the boots off.
Incredible. I mean, you can forget actually what a decent player Palermo was, and
well, he was an incredibly ugly effective player.
Yeah,
yeah. He didn't care. I mean, this is the great divide between him and Riquelme. Mm. He's all about putting the ball over the line.
Yeah,
doesn't matter how it goes in. Yeah. Riquelme is all about the artistry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's fair to say Palermo was a man of limited talent but of infinite resolve.
Yeah, very much, and great desire.
Absolutely.
But it's a great shame that some people, I don't know if this, I hope this is not the case, but some people will immediately think of those three penalties he missed for Argentina in the Copa America. When was it? Was that pre this game?
Yes, that was 1999.
Yeah,
it was, Bielsa was the coach, wasn't it?
Yeah,
right, okay.
Which Palermo labelled his death sentence for his international career.
Yeah, but it also did come back for...
But he did
for,
come back
scored the vital goal against Peru,
yes.
Yeah, to get them to the 2010 World Cup.
And got his World Cup goal in 2010.
And got his World Cup goal
against Greece.
But was he the first Boca player to score the World Cup in, like, you know, since 1934?
It was a long
ridiculous.
Time.
I think he was Argentina's oldest ever goal scorer in the World Cup as well.
Right, well, that's certainly believable. Yeah. I'm sure there hadn't been a Boca goal scorer for a long, long time. Anyway, sorry.
No, not at all. It's all worthwhile. OK, let's go for a quick break, and then after that, we will talk about the match itself. See you in a moment.
Venía para Makelele. Están cambiando ahora para Figo. Cuidado con Guti, que está por el área. Guti está por el área. Cambiaban todas para Raúl. Si pasa Roberto Carlos. El que cierra es Ibarra. Y ahora Roberto Carlos.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
So we talked a bit about the Boca side there, of course. Mm-hmm. The Real Madrid side have got some names that everyone's probably heard of, really. I mean, yeah. Rupert, far away.
This was sort of the initial stages of the Galacticos era. This was before Zidane, Ronaldo and Jonathan Woodgate. But yes, they did. They had we'll run through the team very quickly. They had a young Iker Casillas in goal. Jeremy at right back, Hierro and Carranca in the middle, Roberto Carlos playing the entire left side. They had Alguera, Makaleli, McManaman in midfield.
So McManaman's in the three.
He's in the three. And then we had Guti ahead of them, and then Luis Figo, about time, the game's most expensive player ever.
Well, he just signed that summer, hadn't he?
Signed,
so Real Madrid have won two of the previous three Champions Leagues, and they've added to that by bringing in Figo, which I think is probably, you can date the start of Galactica Zero from that signing.
Mm. Yeah.
And
yeah,
Raul up top.
Yeah, and Raul up top. Yeah, and absolutely. Figo had been absolutely brilliant for the past three years or so for Barcelona. I think, for my money, was the best player in the world. So there was sporting merit to signing him, but it was evidently a market.
Yeah, so that would be a phenomenal side.
Phenomenal side.
Great names in there. So
great coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Vincenzo de Bosco is in charge. So, you know, it's still a cup final.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose any game, for crying out loud.
No, and as Jonathan alluded to, a cup final is very important to the club as well.
Absolutely. So the game's 3 minutes old and we get the first goal.
Yes, we do. And guess who?
Yeah. St. Martin Palermo.
St. Martin Palermo, yeah. Indeed. And yeah, it was a goal, I think, making, which kind of typified, I think, Bianchi's approach for the entire game. He basically split aside and perhaps in half, really. Palermo was up top. Delgado was running all around him. Mm. Riquelme was playing. Everybody else was defending for their lives. No interest. I don't think the fullbacks came past the halfway line except to take throw-ins, pretty much, for the entire game. But yeah,
as well, Madrid's fullbacks didn't go past the halfway line the other direction.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely, which is pretty much what led to this goal. I think Jeremy throws a ball in. It goes straight to Marcos Senna in midfield. And as soon as Senna collects a ball, Delgado's off. Yeah. He's running straight away into the space behind Jeremy. Senna pops a ball left.
It's a beautiful pass.
Yeah, pops a ball off to Basualdo.
Who's
about 75 by that point.
Yeah.
Who had been, I think he'd been at Vélez with Bianchi previously, actually.
Yeah, he would have been, yeah.
So
yeah.
Very experienced. So yeah, he curled a lovely ball down the flank.
It's almost a shame that wasn't the assist.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was a lovely ball.
Because that pass, it needs to be...
I mean, he's got a lot of space to hit.
Yeah.
But he weights it perfectly so that Delgado's run doesn't have to check his stride or anything.
Straight onto it. Delgado heads for the byline. And on the other side of the penalty area, the other fullback hasn't got back quick enough either. Now, Roberto Carlos must be, I think, conservatively 25 times faster than Martin Palermo. But Palermo's still got 5 yards on him. And as the ball comes across, it evades Hierro and Karanka. And Palermo's there to just tap it home.
I mean, tapping.
I think
it's a controlled side foot volley.
Well, yes.
I'm surprised actually you've been slightly dismissive
there.
It's
6 yards though, right?
I mean, I think, yeah, but of the 200 or so goals that Palermo scored,
yes, indeed,
that's probably in the top 20 most difficult.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, but so 1-0 Boca and they're thoroughly enjoying it. And then 1-0 soon became 2-0.
Indeed, with a throw from the other side
with
the other fullback this time.
Mm.
Where I think Roberto Carlos throws a ball in. It eventually gets to Raul on the edge of the box. He miscontrols it. Sebastian Battaglia, más importante para
él. Claro.
Pinches a ball, pops it onto Riquelme, and Riquelme just goes into quarterback mode. One touch, turns, looks, and just sprays effortlessly this 60-yard ball for Palermo. And it's got a perfect amount of backspin on it, so it just holds up as it bounces. I think Casillas had thought about coming off his line to get that.
Mm.
And watching it, you think he probably should have done. Mm. But once a ball bounces and you see how it holds up, he probably would have been stuck if he had come. And so Palermo, again, mentally, was a good 20 yards ahead of the rest of the guys, thankfully. He got there first, the ball bounced up, and it was a lovely finish.
But as you say,
and he hits it on the bounce, not a volley, but on the bounce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Across goal underneath Casillas.
I mean, it's a brilliant finish.
Wonderful
finish. But it just shows that the link up between Riquelme and Palermo and the sort of almost instinctive understanding they had.
Yeah. I mean, it was, as you say, like classic Riquelme, just turns and spins. And
Palermo's first 5 yards were in Riquelme's head.
Just as well.
Yes.
Well, and as you say, it's just as well that
absolutely.
Palermo was 20 yards ahead because he only just gets the shot away, I think.
Yeah, and Fernando Hierro with his chicken wings wasn't the quickest, but a lot of them were much quicker than Martin Palermo.
It's interesting. I mean, it's something that I should have said actually before we talked about the goals. I find it remarkable if you think about that Real Madrid side and you think about the quality. And also now what we think of Spanish football and Spanish teams. You watch that game, as soon as the kickoff happens, it's passed, it's knocked back to, I suppose it would be Hierro, maybe? Mm-hmm. And he just hoofs it up the pitch. Like a long ball. And it's so un-Spanish.
Perhaps, but I think one of the passes that this side played quite a lot was Hierro out to Roberto Carlos.
Yeah.
Now, I watched that game about six times.
No, but this is just a hoof up the pitch.
It may well have been. But he often played long passes for Roberto Carlos, and he also did have a reputation of playing long passes.
Mm.
Well, that was quite controversial. When Capello becomes manager, he encourages him to play that pass.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Madrid media is very critical. Why are they just hitting long balls all the time? But it's an incredibly effective way of playing. Because Roberto Carlos is so quick and plays so high. He sort of, a lot of people know he's a very attacking fullback. He's still coming from an area that other teams are not used to defending against. So because Hierro was so good at that right to left long pass, if he can hit it into that corner for Roberto Carlos to run onto, it means that, you know, that right back, the opposition right back, he's not just thinking about marking Guti in this case, or whoever the left winger happens to be. He's also worrying about Roberto Carlos getting beyond him and that pass going over his head. So I think it's a really dangerous weapon to have in your arsenal.
Yeah. Well, and of course, speaking of Roberto Carlos, you know, he has a moment before he does eventually score. He sort of cuts in and hits the bar. And then, you know, after 6 minutes, it's 2-0 Boca. And then after 12 minutes, Carlos does get his goal and rifles in from, I don't know, sort of 15 yards out, something like that.
It was probably a goal that exposed the one tactical kink in Bianchi's armour that day. Because, like I said, everybody else had their jobs. Everybody else was organised. The three midfielders, the right side of one, Battaglia, would always shuffle back into his right and help out his fullback, Ibarra. Basuare would do the same on the other side. But in this situation, for the first time, I think, in that game, I think it was Makélélé had come over to the right side to help out. And so all of a sudden, Madrid had three. They had Figo, McManaman and Makélélé there. Riquelme being Riquelme didn't bother. Couldn't be bothered to join in there. And so Basuaro and Matalan, their left back, suddenly found themselves outnumbered. And I think the whole Boca side kind of shifts across there to try and compensate a little bit, by which time Figo puts in a deep cross over Raul. It gets Ibarra
wins the header. Ibarra's header is, under normal circumstances, is fine.
Under normal circumstances is fine. However, he's already had a warning shot where Roberto Carlos is there. He knows Roberto Carlos is coming. They've been working up to this. They've been working up to combat this for months up until this game. I mean, this competition, because when it was scheduled, was at the end of the Argentinian season. So Bianchi said, we couldn't do any physical work. Everything had to be tactical. The guys were exhausted. All we could work on was tactics in preparation for this game. So Ibarra, I mean, it may be overly critical to blame Ibarra, but anyway, yes, he kind of balloons a header up into the air and it bounces and ends to Roberto Carlos.
And it's a brilliant finish.
And it's a wonderful finish.
Hits it with the outside of his left foot. Yeah. I mean, where I'd give Ibarra a pass is his positioning is right. Yeah, yes. There's nothing else he can do.
No.
He's won the header. He's got it essentially out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he knows Roberto Carlos is there, you would expect the player in that position to take a touch and then Ibarra can get across.
Yeah.
But Roberto Carlos doesn't take it, so she just lashes it back over the keeper's head. I just think you've got to say it's a brilliant finish.
Yeah, it was an excellent finish, yeah.
And when that goal goes in, I'm sure the neutral's probably thinking, oh, here we go. The title turn, you know. Boca have hit them with a couple of sucker punches, but now the big boys, they score and so on. So what does Bianchi do there? You mentioned that the players were tired going into this game and he's thinking tactical. What then is Boca's response? Because there's not another goal in the game, of course, and it's still early days, only after 12 minutes all this has happened.
I think, to quote the great Steve McLaren, no problems.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's the same. They reacted well to the goal.
Yeah.
But they actually did, because they knew exactly how Madrid were going to play that evening.
Yeah.
Yes, the goal had come, but aside from that, they were fairly comfortable with most of the other things that they had been doing. And I think the turning point for Boca really came at that after 20 minutes, because like you said, they were probably going to be under siege now for a lot of the rest of the game. And so it was going to be a war of attrition really for them. And I think at 20 minutes, things changed a little bit symbolically, because I think the concept of Riquelme sort of became concrete on 20 minutes when he picked up the ball. Boca couldn't keep the ball. It was backs against the wall stuff, like I said already. We're only 20 minutes in. But Riquelme picks up the ball in the middle. He beats Makélélé once. La Porta beats Makélélé again. Goes left, beats Makélélé again. And eventually is hauled down for a free kick. Just out wide, sort of 5-10 yards off a touchline. Places the ball, swerves one for the back post. Nearly dips under the bar. Casillas saves it. There's a huge roar from all the Boca fans, and Boca just looked a little bit revitalised.
Mm.
Like, actually, Riquelme can play.
Yeah,
he can play for us. We're going to be okay.
Yeah, and the game, as I say, carries on, and they hold out for the 2-1 win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, were they surprised that Real Madrid didn't have a bit more?
I don't think so. I think they think that they outwitted them, that they were better than them tactically, that they. They managed to,
and that's what Bianchi was really good at.
And that
he was really good at winning two-legged, knockouts, one-off ties, getting the tactics right, getting them to defend well. Palermo was a great outlet. You got Delgado, buzzing about everywhere. So you've got the physicality of Palermo, you've got the pace of Delgado, and the energy of Delgado. And then, if a ball pops off them or if it comes short, you got Riquelme. He's not going to lose it. He's going to hold it. He's going to, at the very least, waste a bit of time by holding it, kind of, slowing everything down, finding the pass. So Riquelme was a sort of the the release valve is to stop the pressure building up. Mm. And I think you're absolutely right. What happened for 20 minutes was the first real evidence of how that worked. Mm-hmm. And it just took all the intensity out of Real Madrid. Every time it looked like building up a head of steam, there's Riquelme to calm everything down.
Yeah, because I think it's, obviously it's very frustrating when you're chasing a game, right? We've all been there at whatever level. It's very frustrating when you're chasing the game. When you are chasing the great game, it's always with such great urgency. You just want to keep going, keep going. And every time this fella gets a ball and he just swans around with it and everything slows down and you can't get it off him, I think it was infuriating. And there's a wonderful moment right towards the end of the game where Riquelme picks up the ball on the left and turns Jeremy four or five times before he's eventually kicked up in the air and he crumbles down. He crumbles on top of the ball and he just holds it like a baby and he just will not let go until his team, I think it's Basualdo, comes over to take the free kick. And then very gingerly gets up and rolls him the ball. So, yeah, now you can. It was mine, but now you can borrow it.
He's wonderful at drawing a foul, Riquelme.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think, though, that... So when Boca win the cup, of course, mm-hmm. and, you know, the scenes of celebration show mm-hmm. what it means to Bianchi. And you said earlier, what was the quote? He said it was the greatest moment for...
He said, we showed that Argentinian football is the best in the world.
Yeah, OK, so there you go. So that shows what it means to them. It's not that long after that Riquelme goes to Europe, of course. Mm-hmm. I know you love Riquelme, obviously, and one of your favourite players. Do you think he is hugely underappreciated in certain parts of the world, or generally speaking?
Possibly. I think generally, probably yes. But then there are obviously certain pockets of the world who probably hold him a little bit too high, myself included, and certainly half plus one of Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
I think that's the case. And I was thinking about this earlier, actually, and wondering why. And I think someone here had a quote that Riquelme was a man out of time. I think that was your good self, Wilson. Something along those lines.
But I think that's true. I also think that if you've got Riquelme, you have to set up the rest of the team to play to him.
Yeah.
So I'd always been a Riquelme skeptic.
Yep.
And I'd seen him a tiny bit at Barcelona, a little bit more at Villarreal. And Barcelona, I mean, of all the coaches for him to be delivered to Louis van Gaal was perhaps the worst.
Yeah.
And you have the story of Van Gaal giving him a Barca shirt for his kid, for his baby, saying he'll have more need of it than you will. After an £11 million move, which in the days when £11 million was a lot of money, it wasn't sort of a Stoke fullback.
No.
It was... And, he never had a chance at Barcelona because that type of player cannot play for Van Gaal's side. And as football has gone towards that pressing model, there's no place for Riquelme. So Villarreal is a much smaller team. Mm-hmm. We're able to accommodate him. And, he was within a penalty kick of taking them to the Champions League final in 2006. Mm-hmm. And, of course, part of the Riquelme mythos is when it comes to a moment like that, he always missed unless it was for Boca.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then the first Boca game I saw, the first date I went on with Araceli was Boca against Cruzeiro in the last 16 of Libertadores. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly saw what Riquelme was. And I saw him in La Bombonera. And there's that Argentinian columnist whose name escapes me. He talks of him as holding a court in his thrall. That's exactly what it is. You have to have a court there, and that court is only at La Bombonera. It's nowhere else. Mm. It was briefly in Villarreal, but it was, Riquelme is only truly Riquelme when he's playing for Boca at La Bombonera.
Absolutely. And the partnership he has with Palermo, which we see in the game that we're talking about, was one that produced a lot of goals and so on. But of course, they did have a fallout, didn't they, quite spectacularly?
Mm. Yeah, a pretty big fallout, which is kind of inevitable, right? When you think these are two polar opposites, proper opposite sides of a spectrum in pretty much everything, really. Obviously, Riquelme placed the aesthetic and his own personal aspirations, I think it's fair to say, above everybody else, apart from Boca, who he does truly love.
Whereas, he played for free for them for a year.
He played for free for them for 2 years, in fact. He did it twice. The second time, he donated all his money back under Julio Falcioni. Said, build the training ground, do something with a training ground. Actually, when Falcioni left, he said about Falcioni...
He didn't go on with Falcioni at all.
No, he didn't go on with Falcioni at all. He said, why do I need a coach like Falcioni? What's he going to teach me? How to be a goalkeeper? Because Falcioni was a former goalkeeper.
Yeah, and was notoriously defensive.
Yeah.
Although he did win a Libertadores.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed he did. But when I've thought a lot about Palermo and Riquelme and the dichotomy there and binary between the two. And there's a book which actually I think, Wilson, you might have recommended to me a good decade ago now by Eduardo Arcetti, who speaks of...
Oh, the masculinities.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So he's a... Argentine anthropologist, and he speaks of the contradictory character of Argentinian football, where male individual virtues are transformed into contrasting styles and moral attitudes. I think never is that more clear than in Palermo and Riquelme.
Yeah.
And at the moment when this breakdown in the relationship becomes obvious is the moment when Palermo breaks the record.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, this has been expected for a long time. So if you think of La Bombonera, you've got the sort of horseshoe of stands.
Yeah.
And then you've got the executive boxes is giving them far too grand a
the box, just the boxes.
The boxes.
Yeah.
And from one of the boxes, there's a sort of bed sheet being hung out with the sort of counter. Every time he scores, they put another number up.
Yeah, cross out the old one.
Cross out the old ones, yeah. And so everybody's been waiting for this moment. And it finally comes with Riquelme, of course, providing the assist. I mean, Riquelme could easily have scored himself, but yeah. Rolled it square. Palermo knocks it in. And they went off to celebrate in opposite directions.
Yeah.
And not only that, but half the team goes with one and half with the other.
Yeah, it's a fascinating, it's a moment, isn't
it? Yeah, and Palermo is truly furious. And he's got every right to be too as well.
Yeah.
Every right to be furious at that moment.
But Riquelme stole his big moment.
Yeah, uh-huh. Indeed. And it was so bad that when Palermo did finally leave, I think a year after that, and Sebastian Battaglia said that it's probably good now he's gone because now we can...
But his farewell was one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen on a football pitch.
Yeah, Argentinians do farewells like few
so
others.
He built a big stage, they gave him this big cape which looked like a shower curtain. The local kids had sewn. It was like a night sky with stars and moons and things. it was a very, very...
It was remarkable. When for Juan Verón's, I think, penultimate last game, when he first retired but then came back later or whatever... They actually had a witch swinging from the rafters.
Oh, is that right?
Literally a bloke in a witch costume.
Was that for Estudiantes?
Yeah, for Estudiantes.
Because Verón, of course, his nickname is La Brujita, the little witch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, yeah, we should have said. So, but they patched it up, Palermo and Riquelme?
I'm not so sure. I don't think they were ever that friendly anyway.
Okay.
And then they were quite clearly very unfriendly.
Okay.
And they've kind of since gone their separate ways, really. Riquelme doesn't do a whole lot. He's occasionally on Fox, I think, in Argentina, complaining about stuff.
Yeah.
He was talking recently about, he said, I don't know where football's going these days. What are those things they wear? Those things they wear on the back. I don't know what the fuck they're for. What do you need that for anyway? Why do I need anybody to tell me? Football's just about rolling the ball and positioning your body. That's it.
That's all it's about. But so in Boca Juniors themselves, who is seen as the greater legend, or is it not really seen like that? You just appreciate them both for what
I
they
think
were.
Riquelme,
it divides people, doesn't it?
I think it divides people.
Well, I wonder if
people. Riquelme was...
If you were Roy Keane or Riquelme Mick McCarthy, man.
Riquelme was technically voted the club's greatest ever idol a good 6 or 7 years ago now, I think, ahead of Diego Maradona, and that's kind of what made headlines, is they liked him more than Maradona. But yeah, I think, like Jonathan says, I think it divides people. Yeah, because it kind of says a little bit about who you are as a person, I think.
Yeah, well, I think we'll leave it.
Neither being good nor bad, but who do we admire more?
I think it's telling that they both have statues. They're the two sides of what is Boca, what is Argentina.
Absolutely.
There we are, gentlemen. Rupert, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much indeed. It. Jonathan, pleasure as always.
Cheers, thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for listening to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. If you want to hear more stories like that, go to theblizzard.co.uk. And don't forget, we are Monday to Saturday here at Football Ramble Daily, so subscribe to make sure you never miss a show. See you next week.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.